May it please the court, I'd like to emphasize the issue of whether a firearm has to be shown to be functional for purposes of the concealed weapon statute or unlawful use statute, carrying a concealed weapon. This court said quite clearly that exact thing in the Purley case. It first went through the elements of the offense, found that a functional lethal weapon is an essential element. The state has argued that Purley is dicta in that regard because the issue was the peaceable traveler exception. But as I've pointed out in the briefs, the court first dealt with the elements, found that they applied, found that they were met, and then went on to discuss that exception. Don't think the structure of the opinion is consistent with the state's argument.
Now,
isn't every case really limited to its own facts? If we,
as a general proposition, of course, I wouldn't argue with that. But the gun was tested in Purley. The police had possession of it, just as they had possession of it here. And if they tested it, there was no evidence, no question asked about that.
Well, since you mentioned that it was tested here, what about the situation, if we're to adopt your argument, where the person gets rid of the gun and it's not found? You could never prove it was functional.
That's true, much like in an ACA conviction. If the gun's not there, say in a robbery, and the gun's disposed of, the state can't charge the ACA. They can charge the first degree robbery because the legislature has said something that has the appearance of a gun is sufficient. They could have done the same thing here, but didn't do that. So
you're saying basically if people get rid of their guns, then they're protected from prosecution under the statute?
Unless it can be proven by circumstantial evidence, which it was done in several of the cases that both parties have cited, actions, pointing the gun at someone, making threats to blow them away, none of which occurred here, at least not in the scene of the arrest, which was the state's theory of trial. Now, in its brief, the state's argued that the conduct having to do with the other charges of which Mr. Wright was acquitted has some bearing on that. But the jury rejected that testimony, and this court, just like the jury, can't speculate whether any part of that was true at this point. The jury.
What if someone were to say, sure, the gun may not have been proved to be fireable, but you could use it as a club? It could be a lethal weapon if you hit someone over the head with it.
It could be if it is used that way, and I suppose that's a case that could be limited to its facts. I mean, not in this court, I guess, but people have all kinds of things in their pockets that could be used as a club. They're not charged with carrying concealed weapon unless they take some action. That's more a dangerous instrument than a deadly weapon in that regard.
The Southern District stated in its opinion that it need not be proven that the weapon was functional unless the defendant injects that issue into the case. Can you address that?
That really is the whole issue.
That's their interpretation of Purley.
I'm sorry?
And that was the Southern District's interpretation of Purley.
Right, as other courts have said something similar. But the issue comes down to the statute, whether the phrase readily capable of lethal use applies to the term firearm or not. My argument is that the structure of the statute itself with the any other weapon makes it clear that those are to be considered together. Also, there's the comment to the proposed code when there was a change in the concealed weapon law as set out in the Luchin case that's cited in the briefs. The comment, the official comment, specifically says the danger of carrying concealed weapons does not exist if the weapon is non-functional or not readily accessible. Non-function means broken down or incapable of being fired if loaded. It remains a felony to carry a concealed but unloaded functional firearm, just exactly as this court said in Purley. Again, that's both the drafters and this court saying that is an essential element of the case. It was, again, was not dicta, but the statute itself requires that the item be readily capable of lethal use.
What purpose is served by the next sentence, then, the traveling through the state, you know, and saying it has to be it's okay if it's non-functional, if that's just really repeats that it has to be readily capable of, if it has to be readily capable of lethal use, and you're saying that means it has to be functional, then isn't it just surplusage to say that, and you don't violate this if it's not functional?
Well, that's when you have a fully functional firearm is the purpose of that exemption, which is a special negative defense. You can't expect the state to prove the purpose of the journey, that it was a peaceable trip through the state. So I don't see if there's any conflict.
You can prove it was not functional or not loaded, and then that makes it okay to carry across the state. Is that correct? But why would they put the burden on you to show it's not functional if the state already has to show it's functional?
Well, it's not a burden on the defendant ever other than of injecting.
You understand my argument. I mean, those seem, if functionality is included within the initial definition of the crime, what is the purpose of that traveler exception? Where the traveler makes it non-functional, then it's okay.
First of all, the entire statute's rather a hodgepodge of provisions that were inserted at different times by different legislatures, and I don't think it's reasonable to expect consistency from one section to the next. I mean, just in the various sections prohibiting various kinds of possession of weapons, the exhibiting in an angry manner doesn't say anything about firearm or any other specific category. It just says any weapon readily capable of lethal use. Into a house of worship, it says firearm or any other weapon readily capable. A firearm specifically set out loaded or unloaded on the school bus statute. It could be argued that that's not necessary because the definition of firearm in the code says it's a firearm whether loaded or unloaded. So to say the fact that you don't need this other provision.
And it refers back to multiple earlier provisions, not just this one. So that could
correct.
Be the reason.
That was the intent at the time. There's been no indication that there's been any change in the legislature's intent on how it perceives the statute. Again, it could say something that appears to be a deadly weapon. But the harm that the statute is geared towards, according to the comment, according to the cases, is having an actual functional weapon that's concealed, which is why the same kind of rule doesn't apply to something that could simply be used as a club. Or the pocket knife, which it's designated as not including anything with a blade less than 4 inches. Well, a 3.9-inch knife blade can be awfully deadly. Used in a certain manner, but it's not listed in the statute specifically unless it falls under any other weapon. So manner of use and the ability to use it are both crucial parts of this statute. And again, that's what the harm the statute is aimed at, is having an actual weapon concealed away. If it's not functional, it's not a weapon. We don't have to reach the loaded or unloaded question under the facts here. The officers said they checked it and it was loaded, so that's not at issue. But there were cases among those cited where there's a gun in one pocket and some bullets in another. It's readily capable. The gun can be loaded in a matter of a very few seconds. So again, the harm is in the functionality. It's not in the existence of this thing that's shaped like a weapon, might have been designed as a weapon, manufactured as a weapon, but unless someone says that it functions as a weapon, there is no danger to the public, and that's the evidence that the state was lacking here.
Following along those lines, would the state have to prove that an individual wasn't authorized to carry concealed?
I didn't spend much time looking at the concealed carry statute, whether that sets itself up as an affirmative defense or not, or a special negative defense. I'm sorry that I didn't go through that. So I don't know the answer to that, whether that's the state's burden in the first place or the defendant's burden of injecting it. But I think the records are kept so that that could be done by the state if the statute made that an actual element that's the state's burden to prove in every case.
So you say it has to be functioned as a weapon or intended to function as a weapon. What if there's like a gun collector? They never intend, they have it in a case, they have a, you know, and maybe they carry it one place to another, but it's like a Civil War weapon or something. There's intent as a collection or relic, never to be used to shoot anything, but just, or function as a weapon, just as a collector's item.
Well, it's designed as a weapon and can function as a weapon. That's the issue. It's not the possessor's intent, but the fact of whether it's operable or not.
What if someone in the commission of a crime has a weapon, it's fully loaded, and they pull it out and they attempt to fire it and it jams? Then under your definition, that would not be a functional weapon?
No, it would not be.
Isn't that kind of an absurd result?
I can't agree that I would call it absurd. I mean, the question is whether the person possessed the weapon or not. If it's not functional, I would argue that it's not a weapon. And that was shown to be not functional. There may have been all the intent in the world. The state could charge an attempt crime, more than likely, in that situation, because pulling the trigger on a loaded gun probably shows some intent to commit the act there. But
so you look at momentary functionality. I mean, a gun that happens to jam may not jam the next time, but so it goes from functional to non-functional?
Well, it jammed that time, and I'm assuming for purposes of my answer that that's all the evidence we have. The gun could be tested, it could be fully operable, and the examiner could say that was a momentary jam.
Normally it would operate. So
then
such a weapon might be found to be capable of lethal use?
I would say yes, if that's the evidence.
You'll have time for rebuttal. Thank you. You may proceed.
May it please the court?
Yes.
A person commits the crime of unlawful use of a weapon for carrying a concealed weapon if the person knowingly carries concealed upon or about his person a knife, a firearm, a blackjack, or any other weapon readily capable of lethal use. The state has to show that appellant in this case knowingly carried a concealed firearm. That was how appellant was charged in this case. The state had no duty to show that the firearm was functional, readily accessible, or that it was unloaded and ammunition wasn't readily accessible. The statute sets a defense, a special negative defense, to this crime in subsection 3, and that special negative defense provides that the defendant can inject the issue that the weapon was not functional. And that's what happened in State v. Purley, the case cited by appellant. In that case, the defendant did inject the issue at trial, and then the burden shifted on the state to prove that the weapon was, in fact, functional.
You know, the interesting thing about Purley and the reason why they did that is interesting that if the state didn't have to prove that the gun was functional, why did they test fire the gun? Why did they have testimony that the gun had been test fired in the first place?
Well, I'm not aware from reading Purley. I don't know how this came at trial.
You know, I don't either, and that's the problem. That's the origin. Purley's kind of the origin of where the special negative defense comes from. But before that, it's my understanding that most prosecutors, when they put on their case, had some testimony from some expert in a police department that the gun was functional. Why the devil did they do that? Now different aspects of carrying a concealed weapon or displaying a weapon have to do with whether the gun appeared to be functional, whether it was loaded or unloaded, whether it's really capable of lethal use. But at some point in time in this state, we required this prosecutor to show that the gun was functional. Where did we diverge from that to just the fact that a gun is a loaded or unloaded, it's a lethal weapon.
Well, if it is a firearm, then this is all the state has to show, that it is a firearm. And if the defendant chooses to inject the issue that it was not functional, then the state bears the burden of proving
that
it was.
Then why does the statute say readily capable of lethal use? It could just say carry a firearm.
It
but if it has an additional requirement, it says readily capable of lethal use.
Well, the statute actually reads that if a person carries concealed on or upon his or her person a knife, a firearm, a blackjack, or any other weapon readily capable of lethal use. So if that wasn't a firearm, it was a different instrument that maybe under the circumstances could be readily capable of lethal use, then the state had to prove that. That would be an element of the crime, but it only applies to any other weapon.
So you think it's defining firearm and the other ones, knife and the others you listed, as defining those as readily capable of lethal use and saying others that fall in this category?
Correct. The legislature has presumed that the firearm is readily capable of lethal use. And only the issue of its functionality comes if the defendant injects the issue, a special negative defense under subsection 3. And the special.
So if I'm not transporting, if I'm not in the act of transporting something, but I have a non-functional weapon, I can't rely on this special exception. So if I have a completely non-functional, no trigger, no, you know, just. The insides are taken out of it, so I have a weapon. If I'm not transporting it, but I'm carrying it, would I be found? I'm unclear. It seems too broad what you're saying. If they're just saying all weapons, regardless of their functionality, are considered readily capable of lethal use, then you could never pick up the old firearm from the Civil War that no longer had a firing pin or whatever, without violating the statute. And isn't that something that was not intended by the legislature?
Well, the statute prohibits concealed carrying of the firearm. It would not apply if you're
not... So I have it in a box, or I have it...
Correct. If you have it at your home, I don't believe that that would be covered by the statute. It only covers concealed carrying of a firearm.
Right.
So it would require the person to carry the firearm and... to be concealed.
Well, they can carry a Civil War pistol in their belt.
And if it's not functional, that's a defense that can be injected by the defense, and then it would shift the burden of proof to the state. But before the defendant injects the issue of the functionality, it is not an element of the crime.
I had a case in the Court of Appeals, an ACA case, where someone used a coat hanger, which normally would not be considered capable of lethal use, but they used a coat hanger and sharpened it up and did something with it to use as a weapon, capable of lethal use. And we said, well, that's fine.
Well,
anything could be, almost anything, a toothbrush could be filed down and be used as a knife. Almost anything is capable. And like I said, a gun, you say a gun could be used almost like a blackjack, whether you're shooting it or not, as it's capable of lethal use if you hit someone over the head with it.
Well, if it is not one of the weapons that is specifically enumerated in the statute, if it is something else that can be used, it's any other weapon that is readily capable of lethal use, then the state has to prove as an element of the crime that this weapon that does not fall within the category of a firearm, blackjack, or a knife is readily capable of lethal use, because the statute provides any other weapon readily capable of lethal use.
Isn't the significant word in the statute other?
Correct.
Because if other was not there, the word other indicates that the enumerated weapons were considered already to be readily capable of lethal use.
Correct. So if that is not a firearm or one of the enumerated weapons in the statute, then the state has to prove it's an element of the crime to prove that any other weapon is actually readily capable of lethal use. And there is no statutory definition of readily capable of lethal use. The only definition comes from MAI 33300, and that definition, readily capable of lethal use, is readily capable of causing death, and the definition specifically states that a firearm is readily capable of lethal use, whether loaded or unloaded. And this definition is certainly consistent with the statutory language.
If the court would accept your position, what would we do with Purley? Would we overrule it, or would we distinguish it as the language and as being dicta?
Well, Purley, actually, the court in Purley specifically stated that this is a special negative defense. And the court stated that if the defendant injects the issue of being peaceful traveler throughout the state, then the burden would shift to the state and that this is a special negative defense. And then it also contains a language that the state had to prove that the weapon was functional and accessible. But this only came because Purley did raise a special negative defense.
Well, under the peaceably traveling through the state exemption or special negative defense, it can be readily capable of lethal use and the exemptions still apply, correct?
Correct.
So it doesn't have anything. So it does. I mean, it can be fully loaded, fully functional, and the exemption of peaceably traveling through the state still applies.
Correct. And the exemption, when it talks about being unloaded, the exemption is that it's unloaded and ammunition is not readily accessible, so the state would have to go.
Right, but that's a different that's a different special negative, right?
Correct.
I mean, that the law has always been you can carry concealed, readily capable of lethal use, functional, loaded, and everything else, so long as you're peaceably traveling through the state. And that was designed because some states allowed.
I believe the person has to have a permit to carry a concealed weapon.
Now, you mean here? I mean, my understanding is that exemption applied long before that statute was invoked. It's always been the law as long as you're peaceably traveling through the state. And that's why all those cases talk about why somebody started in Arkansas and where they're on their way to Iowa, as opposed to starting in Missouri on the way to Iowa.
Right. Now, as Judge Draper said, if it's an element, that means it's a criminal offense. If it's an element, what's so hard about the prosecutor or the police showing that the gun's functional? What's the hard part there?
Well, it doesn't become, the state only has to prove it when the defendant raises the issue. If the defendant raised the issue that it wasn't functional, then the burden is shifted to
the
state.
But if the statute states it's an element, why should the defendant have to, why should the burden be shifted to the defendant to make the case versus the, normally the element's got to be proved by the prosecutor?
Well, that's why it is provided in subsection 3 as a special negative defense, because it is not an element. It's not set in subsection 1, which sets the elements of the crime. Under subsection 1, the state has to only prove that appellant knowingly carried a concealed firearm. And there is no other requirement under subsection 1 which sets the elements of the crime. It only becomes a requirement when the defendant raises one of the defenses set in subsection 3, and he said that the weapon wasn't functional, that it was unloaded and ammunition was not readily accessible, or that the weapon itself was not readily accessible. And once one of these defenses is injected in a case, the state does have the burden to prove that, yes, it was functional, or if it was unloaded, that ammunition was not readily accessible, or the weapon itself was not readily accessible. But even if the state had to show that the weapon was functional, there was sufficient evidence in this case to support this finding. The weapon was found in appellant's waistband. It was described as 9mm handgun. It was admitted into evidence. It was fully loaded. The ammunition was admitted into evidence. Appellant admitted that he regularly carried a gun and that everybody knew that he had a gun. And it was also he displayed the gun to witnesses when he demanded something. And it was reasonable for the jury to infer from all this evidence that this weapon was functional because he used it to threaten people and it was fully loaded and he always carried it on him. And the jury also saw the weapon itself and the ammunition. Does the court have any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Does your argument depend on us finding in subparagraph 1 that the phrase readily capable of lethal use applies to the term firearm?
The functionality portion of my argument does, yes. Now, I did argue
because
concealed.
Because if you look at paragraph 10 and paragraph 8, subparagraph 8 and subparagraph 10, they have the language carries a firearm or any other weapon readily capable of lethal use. That's 8. And 10 is carries a firearm, comma, whether loaded or unloaded, comma, or any other weapon readily capable of lethal use. So by the way that they use the phrase any other weapon capable of lethal use in 8 and 10, isn't that contrary to your argument that that phrase has to apply to knife, firearm, and blackjack?
I don't think it is contrary because, as I said in my initial argument, the statute was amended at different times for different purposes. This particular section that Mr. Wright was charged under is part of what I would term the original statute that came in as part of the criminal code, was adopted from different provisions earlier.
But we have all kinds of our rules of statutory construction are that you determine what is meant by the language by reading it in context. So reading subsection 1 and how words are used in the subparagraphs of subsection 1 surely is a proper way to determine what they meant in subparagraph 1.
I mean, even assuming that's correct, I don't think it changes the argument because it's the same language in those three provisions. There's still the word other. It lists the firearm. It says, or any other weapon. And I
So doesn't that evidence the legislature's intent that it is only weapons that are not firearms in 8 and 10 that you must show they're readily capable of lethal use? And in 1, it's only weapons that are not a knife, a firearm, and a blackjack that must be proven to be readily capable of lethal use.
I don't think so for a couple of reasons. One, I think the use of the term other implies that the readily capable does apply to all of them. I think that reinforced by the comment that I read, which was part of the code when it was initially passed, that Purley interpreted the statute based upon that comment, and it said that it is an essential element of the case. The legislature has never changed since those two things happened.
But as Judge Breckerman said, when you say there's a disjunctive, you say a gun, loaded or unloaded, that seems to imply any kind of, just owning having the gun. Unloaded means it's not capable of, if you don't have anything in it, it's not then capable, there's an exception made for that. The gun, it could be loaded or unloaded, which means you just have to have a gun.
It may not be instantly usable, but the bullets can be in another pocket. I mean, that phrase is in the school bus section. So the gun can be in the backpack and the bullet's in the pocket, and that gun is just as dangerous as the one that's loaded. And I think that's the reason for the specification there, whether loaded or unloaded.
But it doesn't say with bullets that are readily accessible.
It doesn't say that, but I would argue that it's in the readily capable of lethal use, but at least the intent of the legislature shows there that the harm they're trying to get at is keeping firearms off of school buses, and perhaps In such a case, the state could argue that the intent there is not to have the functionality element by that use of loaded or unloaded that does not appear in the concealed weapons statute.
But it has the same language, or any other weapon readily capable of lethal use. So we would then be required to interpret that language with that phrase, readily capable of lethal use, only modifying any other weapon in that subsection, and interpret that the exact same language in subsection 1 to modify all of the weapons that are enumerated.
Again, I don't think you have to limit the definition in that phrase, because readily capable of lethal use, again, under my argument, would apply to the functionality. It's still readily capable under many of the cases if the ammunition is available. So again, the statute can require the functional weapon. It doesn't necessarily require it to be loaded. I mean, that's what Luchin itself was concerned with. The case was, the gun there was tested, as Judge Fisher pointed out, many of the cases point out, Perley pointed out, that the gun was tested. It was in Luchin as well, I believe, but the question is whether the statute applied to an unloaded but functional gun, and that's why they brought up the comment, and they said, we hold in that case that it does not restrict that the state can prosecute the unloaded gun.
Are there any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Interesting argument.